साधुकं सुरक्षितं कृत्वा अप्रमादेन संपादेत। Let's take a moment to open this opportunity up to all those beings who do not come past in samsara. Those beings who may today be devas, brahmins, spirits, demons, or those who are still among the dead. Our ancestors who will have predeceased us. Wherever they may be, just like us, they're all destitute in samsara, desolate without the gift of Dharma. It is today our obligation, our duty, to repay for all those favors, all that support, assistance that they may have provided to us throughout this infinitely long journey in samsara. There may have been infinite number of times where those beings we have come across in samsara might have pulled us out of trouble, or perhaps guided us through life, made good people out of us, and abstained us from doing unmeritorious deeds. However, it is uncertain where they may be today, but it is still, nevertheless, our duty and our obligation to open this opportunity for them. Let us invite them to join us and witness this meritorious deed. And in witnessing this meritorious deed, may they be able to acquire the merits that we will be acquiring, that we will be generating out of this meritorious deed. And may they rejoice in these merits, and if any of them have been born in the woeful plains, may through the power of these merits, they will redeem themselves from those woeful plains. And for all beings in the blissful plains, may through the power of these merits, as well as listening to the sermon, understanding and comprehending the Buddha's teaching, may they be able to attain the supreme bliss of Nirvana. So with that firm resolve in mind, as I now invite the devas, brahmins, spirits, demons of the dead, I invite you to extend that invitation in your hearts and in your minds to all those beings out there in the 10,000 world systems. May they join us. May they rejoice in these merits. May they be able to listen to the Dharma, understand, comprehend, and attain the supreme bliss of the Dharma. Samanta Chakravalesu Anta Gacchantu Devata Sambham Vairajas Sunantu Sagra Mokhadam Dhamma Savana Kalo Ayam Bhadanta Dhamma Savana Kalo Ayam Bhadanta Dhamma Savana Kalo Ayam Bhadanta. Let's all take a moment to acknowledge the fact that although today we are in the seat of the Dharma and our lives have transformed beyond our wildest imagination, it may be that you are unable to recognize who you used to be compared to the person you are today, and that is because of the Dharma, it is because your life has been transformed as a result of the Dharma seeping into your lives. That being the case, let us take a moment to acknowledge who we might have been in this infinitely long journey in samsara, not having had the opportunity to associate noble ones, moral people. Our associations will virtually always have been with immoral, ignoble people who defied our mighty aberration and desire, aversion and delusion, blinded us with avidya and tanha, ignorance and attachment. And having done so, we might have abused, slandered, desecrated and offended the noble ones, the Aryas, the Samma Sambuddhas, the Pachyaka Buddhas, Arahata Buddhas, Anadami, Sakudagami, Sotapannas, Vidyam, the powerful, having attained the fruits, as well as the Buddhas, ministry, the Sambhadi Shasana. or actions of abuse, slander, and desecration you might have directed toward them, either knowingly or unknowingly, such actions, thoughts, and words may today block and hinder our progress in the Dhamma. So, before we all commence, let us all take a moment to solemnly, genuinely, acknowledging this is who we will have given, take a moment to seek forgiveness from the Noble Ones. And finally, let us all make a firm resolve that through the course of this sermon, may you be able to understand the Dhamma, comprehend the Dhamma, in a way that removes you once and for all from the state of Buddha-jana and helps you step into the stream, thus becoming a stream enterer, the stream that takes you to Nirvana. And if there are any among you who have already attained that stage, may through the course of this sermon you be able to fulfill the subsequent stages and attain the supreme bliss of Nirvana. So with that firm resolve in mind, I invite you all to prepare yourselves to listen to this sermon. I'm going to start us off on a really simple question. I promise, it should be a simple question. You know me, right? I only ask simple questions. Yes? But I'm a simpleton. I don't get much. So I only know little things, I know little, so I only ask simple questions. So here's my simple question. Who are you? Linus. Who are you? What are some of the answers that are rushing into your mind right now? You're probably thinking of your name. I'm Mr. So-and-so, or, sorry, I don't know, I'm Dr. So-and-so. Apologies. No offense. Is that who you are? Or is that who people say you are? That's how people identify you. What else? Who are you? You might say, well, when asked the question, who am I can think of, I am the child of this person, of these two people. This is my mother, this is my father. Right? That's who I am. Again, you're giving me an answer based on what someone else said you are. Or who someone else said you are. How do you know they're your parents? Someone said they're your parents. You could have gotten mixed up at the hospital. Even if not, even if you genuinely are the biological children of those parents,
self based on somebody else or something else external. I'm not asking about that. I'm asking about who are you? Yes, Buddha. A human being. That's a very clever answer. A human being. How do you know that? You say you're a human being. How do you know you're a human being? Yes. Did you not learn that for science? At some point in your schooling life, you learned that, you know, if you've got a face, two eyes, a nose, a mouth, two ears on either side of your head, and a body that looks vaguely like the picture that they had in your textbook, then that's a human being. So from that day forward, you thought, that picture looks a lot like what I see in the mirror, so I'm probably a human being. Again, you defined yourself based on what somebody else said you are. Some might say, well, I'm so many years of age. I'm 6, I'm 7, 8, 20, 30, 50, 60, 70, 80, whatever. Is that who you are? I'm a man of 45 years of age. How do you know you're 45? How do you know you're 45? Because? Yes. Someone said you are. And again, 45 is a number that is based on a numbering system that has been defined by other people. A year is 365 days. Why? Because someone said so. So who are you then? You're very modest, madam. A person with lots of faults. Why do you call them faults? Okay, give me one example of a fault that we might all have. Anger. A lot of people have anger. Yeah? Jealousy. Greed. Selfishness. Ignorance. You don't have that, do you? So a lot of people have these things, but why do we consider them faults? Why? Don't get angry. Who said that? Other people. Why? Because it's wrong. You shouldn't be angry. Don't be jealous of other people's accomplishments. Why? Because that's wrong. Who said that? Other people. So, are you beginning to realize that you've come a long way in life, whatever age you are right now? You've come a long way in life, and I'm asking you this very simple question: who are you? And all you're coming out, all you're spurting out are definitions that other people have given you. You're saying is the composite of what other people have painted you as. This is their picture of you. Your name, where you live. Again, why is that where you live? Who decided that? Yeah. Particularly perhaps in your case, and even in the case of others, you know, even if you're an adult, you might think, well, no, I decided where I live. But why? Why did you decide that's where you were going to live? Lots of external factors influence that? When you say external factors, again, you're pointing your finger outside and saying, they decided where I was going to live. Whether it was the climate, it might be. You just don't like hot weather, so you've chosen a country where it's cool to live. Or you live in the hill country. Again, you have become the net result of what other people, other external factors, have shaped you to be. So it seems to me like life is nothing other than the transformation that happens to us, either mentally, physically, or both, based on what other people want us to be like, based on how external factors shape us. And so as we go through this process of life, from birth to death, we are going through a change internally and externally based on what other people want us to be like, based on what society expects of us, based on these external factors that shape us 24/7. Is that an unfair statement? Or does that at least vaguely ring a bell? Does that kind of sum up what life is like, generally at least? So did you come into this world to live someone else's agenda? Sounds about right. Are you happy with that fact? From birth, you know, you were given a name. Did you have a choice? Some people even go through a deed, right? And get their name changed. Is it a deed, they say, what's it called? What do you put on the newspaper, what's it called? Name change, yeah. But again, you chose another name, but where did you get that name from? Other people. You either heard somebody else say that name out loud, you read it in a book, maybe a lovely fairy tale, you thought, oh, Gretel, that's a lovely name, I want that. Then you chose to go to a certain school at a young age. Why? Others decided that for you as well. And, you know, quite interestingly, if you do a survey, boys love the color. Okay, blue and red. And girls like the color pink. You're evidence of that fact, aren't you, madam? Why? You know, I think psychologists have done a lot of research behind this, and what they have found out is that young children, if you're a boy, generally there's this notion that boys are associated with the color blue, and therefore what parents do is they surround them with blue. And they surround them with toys like cars and robots and cricket bats and balls and things like that, like boyish things, that are things that are considered to be masculine, and then that's the environment in which they grow up, and that's what they associate themselves with as they grow into adulthood. And then girls, on the other hand, are surrounded with pink. You know, when you get news she's a girl, then the paint comes home, the painters come home, and they start painting the walls pink. The cot is pink now, everything in the home, the cupboards, the entire room has to go pink. Pink washed. Not a whitewash, it's a pink wash. And therefore, girls grow up liking the color pink, because that's what they've come to know best. And then they're given dolls to play with, soft toys, vivid colors. And then girls, you know, tiaras, things like that. And then girls grow up liking these things. This is study that has been done in science. I think there'll be a lot of you who will probably have done a bit of research into this as well. So again, even the toys that you're playing with, even your favorite color, has been decided for you by other people. Your age has been decided for you by other people. The shirt, the dress you're wearing right now, the top you're wearing right now, that color was determined by other people. How you wear your hair right now, that was decided by other people. You were influenced by other people. The color you paint your nails. The color of the car you drive, what make, what model it is, what brand phone that you use, and what service provider you like to use, which street you live on, what courses you did at school, at university, what profession you chose to do, who you decided to get married to. How many children you wanted to have, what you were going to name them. Are you seeing that how your life is entirely a series of decisions made on your behalf by the people that surround you and the external factors that surround you? So you are the net result of what other people want you to be. That's like a farm. You know, in a farm you have chickens. The farmer decides how big this chicken has to grow, whether they are furry or not, whether they can fly or not, how long they're going to be caged for. I mean, who decided how many years of schooling you ought to have? Who decided? Who said you had to go to school for 13 odd years? Other people, right? Who decided when you have to get married? Other people. Oh, already. You know, we're going through a production line. This is like a human factory. Our lives are being shaped by other people. We are going through a transformation in the disguise that we are independent. People like to think that we are independent. We like to think we are independent. You know, when given the right to vote, when given the right to say our piece, say what we like to say, follow our religion of choice, all of a sudden we get this feeling that we're all independent. But really, all that happens is you're given a series of choices. All that's left to you is which choice you want to make. And even that is also influenced. Are you not Buddhists because your parents decided you were going to be Buddhists? For the vast majority of you? If you're a Muslim, then chances are that's what your parents decided you were going to be. Right from your name, to where you live, to what religion you follow, to what academic pursuit you had at school, to what profession you're doing right now, to when you're deciding on retiring, to what color you've painted your house, to what car you drive, to how much grass you have on your lawn, to what colors you, what flowers you grow in your garden. All of these things have been influenced by other people. This is why I'm saying you're going through, you know, we have all been going to dial. Set number of settings. It's like 1 to 10. It's either a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 or 10. What color you're going to paint your hair? Color your hair is one out of a series of choices. Who you're going to get married to? Again, it's one out of a series of choices. And we say we are independent. And we say we choose how we live our lives. We say we are the master of our lives. I am free to do what it is I fancy. Really? How did you bring up your children? Like they wanted to be brought up? Or how you wanted to bring them up? Yes. You know, from a very young age, you're transforming their lives. They want to be independent, but no, you have to make a call on what choices they have, and within those limited choices, they can pick one, two, or three. My point is this. So when I ask you, who are you? Whatever response you're going to give me is ultimately the net result of these external factors and how they have touched your lives, how they have shaped your lives. Even if you say your name is so and so, again you're giving me something that someone else has said. If you're telling me I'm this old, this many years of age, again you're giving me something that someone else has said, this is how old you are. You know, one fine day you asked your mother, "Mother, how old am I?" She said, "Putta, you're 6. When do I become 7? In another year's time. Oh. And then you kept track. You started counting. So since then, you know that you are this particular age because someone said you were 6. And someone said every year you can add 1 to that. You can increment 1. But what I really want to know is, who are you? Not who is it that other people say you are? I want to know, who are you? I'll help you trying to find an answer to this question. Because you know what? For a long time in my life, I didn't have an answer to that question myself. If you really know who you are, how's this? You don't even have to be here. If you really know who you are, you don't have to be here. So this is a class to help people do what? Discover who? Yourself. You have come to a place to help discover yourself. Once you've discovered who you are, you don't have to be here. You can get up, you can walk out, and do whatever you like with your life. Does that sound like a good deal? You don't have to come back here again. People spend a lot of time trying to find out who they are. Sometimes they go on seminars. Sometimes they listen to speakers, influential speakers, speakers who talk about personality development, speakers who talk about life in general. They follow a lot of academic research stuff, philosophy, psychology, sciences, all this while people trying to discover who they are. But everyone fails. Because ultimately what everyone finds out is whatever answer they give to that question is nothing other than what someone else has decided they are. But there is one philosophy in this world which helps you discover who you are, independent of what other people say you are. And that is the Buddha's philosophy. That is the Buddha's teaching. Let me give you this answer. Let me help you make a little bit more sense of what I'm trying to express. Do you see these flowers around me? Can you all see them? What do you think about them? What about the decoration? Is it nice? Pretty? Yeah? Why? Why do you say it's nice? Think about it, madam? Oh! Can you leave him here? Because you decided in your own mind that this is nice. Yes? There may be some among you whose taste of design, interior design, is not this. You might be going, yuck, in your mind right now. Whose choice was this? So some of you like what you see, and others don't like what you see. Some find this pretty, some find this good-looking, beautiful, whereas others don't. They find this ugly, disgusting. Change. Why? Why did you decide that this was beautiful? If you're telling me that you decided, in your own mind, you had a free choice to make that this is pretty, this is nice, good-looking, perhaps it's the colors. Why? So the regular listeners, you will already have cogs turning in your head right now. Answers, you're dying to throw the answers out. If you've been a frequent visitor to this Discovering Yourself class, then some of these answers will now be at the tip of your tongue. And you just want to get it out there. You're vexing because of attachment. Okay, let me ask you this question. I have something, two colors. I say, okay, blue and pink, like we discussed before. Right? So you said boys like blue and you said girls like pink. Why do boys like blue? Good. Why do they think it's nice? It's created in their mind. So do you all have a favorite color? But you used to, huh? Why do you have a favorite color? Why is that color better than any other color? Excuse me. What has that color given you that other colors haven't? Has it taken your children to school? Done a school run for you, that particular color? Let's say it's yellow. What did yellow cook a meal for you? Why is yellow better than any other color? Okay, you're saying it's good looking. Why is it good looking? Why is it good? Why is it nice? Why is it pretty? What's wrong with every other color in the rainbow? You have to find the answer to this. Because in finding the answer to this, you will discover who you are. You hear a noise coming from somewhere. You want to turn your head and have a look at it. Oh, I think the other day I was in the middle of a sermon. Someone's phone rang. It was someone at this side of the room. And everyone else in the room is looking that way. As if the sole purpose of them coming here... So everyone's looking that way. So I said, okay, now that you look, you're going to have to pay the price. I'm going to start asking questions. Why did you look? Because if we do things just because, is it right for us to call ourselves humans, intelligent people, if we do things just because? You know, there's a danger behind this. I'll come to that in a moment. If we don't think about what we're doing before we do it, there's a huge danger behind this. There's a sound coming from somewhere. Let's say it's a phone ringing, and everyone in the room is glancing that way now. So I ask the question, is it because it's your phone, sir? I said, no. Why did you look then? So they're saying, oh, because I wanted to know whose phone it was. Why? Is it you who pays the bill? No. Then why? They should have put it on silent. Okay, so your looking is helping achieve that how now? No answers to any of these questions. And then a little while later, another phone rang. Guess what everyone did? They look that way. Only 15 minutes after, everyone's looking that way. So why did you do that again? If we don't know the answer to this, these questions, let me tell you the danger behind this. You move house. Now you're living in your new home. Okay? You're getting accustomed to the neighborhood. And a little while into your life at your new home, you're getting a little bit too accustomed to your neighborhood. And this is by giving furtive glances to the lady next door. You know, that's when you know you're getting a little bit too accustomed. It's probably time to move on. There's a young lady next door. So you're observing this, what's going on next door. You want to get to know your neighbors, right? And you're observing that there's a man who lives next door. He looks like a bit of a rowdy fellow, a rowdy chap. He leaves home about 8 o'clock in the morning. And he gets home pretty late. So you're now observing this behavior. And you think she's good looking. You don't know why. This is the danger. Okay? So I'm asking you, why do you think this is good looking? You don't know the answer. I'm showing you the danger behind that. So you're thinking now she's good looking. So you walk over. So let's say, imagine you're a man. You walk over. And you knock on the door. This lady walks to the front door. And you now just want to make chit-chat. you know, you didn't come here with any purpose really, or except for you wanted to see her. That's really why you're here. You're just asking, we've just moved into the neighborhood, and I just thought I'd pop by and say hello. Oh, you know, it's good to have you around. You know, so is there anything I can help you? You're stuck because you can't genuinely give the right answer there. You know, I just came to see you because I think you're really good looking. You pervert. That's what you're going to get back, right? So you're not going to say that. Instead, you might say, oh, can I borrow your mamati? I've got some work I need to do in my garden. Oh yeah, one moment, I'll be right back. Whew, I got through that one. So she brings the mamati, you borrow it, you take it back. Now, I ask you the question again. Let's ask that chap and the question again. Did you find her beautiful? My God, she's so pretty. Why? I don't know. Look at her eyes. Look at her pitch black hair. So beautiful. Why? Why is pitch black hair beautiful? I don't know. Look at the way she dresses. The colors that she chooses to dress herself in. So astounding. Why? I don't know. So you get into this habit now. Every once in a while you go that way, you say hello, and like I said, you get a little bit too accustomed for your own good. Now, a few weeks pass by, and you know what's going to happen. The man that's married to this woman gets news of this. He finds out that his wife has been having visitors, and it's the new chap who moved in next door. Have you all watched horror movies? Yes? You shouldn't be watching horror movies at your age. I should speak to your mother. But actually, life is a horror movie, so you're all right. Isn't life a horror movie? Yeah. I don't know why you go to the cinema. It's free. You can watch horror movies for free. Just open your eyes and look outside your window. Look through the mirror as you go, as you age. That's a horror movie in itself. So anyway, this guy gets word that, you know, you've been having a crush on this lady, and he decides to teach you a lesson. You must have seen such stories in horror movies and also in real life, right? These things happen. So now he decides, I'm going to teach you a lesson. This day he pretends to leave home, but he doesn't. Your relationship with this next door lady has gone too far for your own good now. He used to be borrowing a mamati, but now that's developed. Now when you go there, you spend a few hours getting up to no good. I'm not going to fill in the detail. You can do that yourself. So this day, this man decides to stay home and not leave. And then the wife going, hey, honey, why aren't you going to work today? No, I just thought I'd hang around. And he unplugs the phone, switches off the mobile, so you can't communicate, you can't tell the other guy, don't come today. He comes over. The lady goes to the door, answers the door. Man walks in. Now they get up to their old mischief. Now it's time for all hell to break loose. The number of stories I've heard where similar things have happened. On one occasion, not very far from here, in a neighboring town, a man had discovered that his wife was cheating on him with a neighbor. This man had got news of this, and he was abroad. He was in some other country. He'd got news of this, and he'd come back uninformed and discovered that this what he thought was actually going on at home, there was a machete that he'd been keeping for, you know, when the occasion requires it. He discovered what was going on, picked it up and chopped the man's neck and head in half. That was the end of that story. Obviously the man died. This man went to prison for a good few years, and then he came back, got out of prison, and now he's living back with the same woman. He's living a life with the same woman. Now, who's there to speak up for the man who had to sacrifice his life? Who's there for the man who didn't have any answers to why do you find her good looking, and he didn't have an answer? What if, as you know, young guys here, as you're walking along the road, you see a girl standing in the bus hold and you think she's pretty? I ask you why, you say, I don't know, she's just pretty. You know, I ask you, why do you like fair girls more than dark girls? And you, what's the answer? I don't know. I don't know though. I don't know why. So you don't know why. You see this fair girl, you think she's pretty. Her boyfriend standing next to you, next to her. And you didn't know that. You give her a wink. He sees you do this. Now, that's the end of your chapter. Did I not tell you the story about this? About a young monk at our monastery who rang one of his friends lately. They were playing in their playground adjacent to the school, and there was a van that was driving past. Do you remember the story? So some children, they were playing on a ground close to their school, playing cricket, as it seems, and the ball's going to the boundary, someone's going to pick the ball up. At the same time, this guy gets a call, he's on the phone, but they'd observed that there was a white van driving back and forth in this area, in the vicinity. And what had happened is this guy, he walks up to the boundary to pick the ball up, that van stopped immediately, right in front of that guy. Door opens, man gets out with a machete in his hand, and he chops this guy's head in half. Tries to pull the knife out, but it doesn't come off. It's gone that deep. So it's a cleaver. Imagine a meat cleaver. Gets back into the van, he drives away. Shocking, right? That's not the shocking bit. They got the wrong guy. So I ask you, do you like sport? Why? Okay, you like exercise. Okay, I get that. You need exercise for your body, right? Because you need to keep healthy. Tennis is as good an exercise as swimming, one might say. So why do you prefer tennis to swimming? Why do you prefer one sport to the other? If the answer is I don't know, well, the guy who was playing cricket there didn't know why he was there. He didn't know why he liked that sport, he was just there. And this is what he had to suffer. The consequences of his choices. Now those people, they got the wrong guy. What do you think? Do you think they're not going to go after the right guy now? If they went so far and it was the wrong guy, well, next stop is the right guy. Because until that problem has been solved, the problem remains to be solved. So now their next stop is going to be, let's get the right guy. And when you get to the right guy, the reason that he has to go through this ordeal is because he couldn't answer the question, why do I find that girl good looking? Do you see the danger? What if you're walking along the street, right, ladies, and you see a flower bed? Beautiful red roses. I ask you, why do you find roses beautiful? You say, I don't know. You decide, I'm going to take one of these home to grow at home in my flower bed. You pick one of those up. Little did you know that that flower bed belongs to the king. Now in these days they're a little bit more forgiving, but back then, if you were committed stealing or just taking, you didn't have any intention of stealing, you just thought that was just there for anybody to take. You picked it up, now you're considered a thief. You've just stolen royal goods. And you have trespassed on royal property. What do you think is going to be the punishment? Either that, or they'll have your hands chopped off. Only because you couldn't answer the question, why do I find roses beautiful? This is the reason. In other words, you don't know what? Who you are. For as long as you can't answer the question, why do you like pink and not blue? Why do you find roses beautiful? Why do you like chocolate cake compared to vanilla cake? For as long as you can't answer that question, you don't know who you are. Because I'm asking you personal questions about yourself. Why do you like one versus the other? And you can't answer the question. You just say, just because. Or, I don't know. So I'm asking a question about you and you're telling me, I don't know. So you don't know you. You don't know yourself. For as long as you don't know yourself, these things can happen. Is it not dangerous? Can these things not happen? Is this all makeup stuff? Some people, they're like gold. And when they like gold and they see gold, now they want gold. Gold necklace around someone's neck. That's pretty. I want it for myself. I don't have the means to get it. I don't have money to get it. So, what's the alternative? Yes. Steal it. So I ask you, why do you like gold? You're not interested in value. No, it's not about value. You're not getting that necklace to sell it and then get the money and then buy something useful with it. That's not why you're wanting it. You just like gold. I ask you why. Well, it's very pretty. Gold is just beautiful. Why? I don't know. Is your answer. Now you see an opportunity to snatch that necklace and you're going to go for it. And if you get caught, then you're going to have to suffer the consequences. You might have your hands chopped off. You might have your hands burned off. And in some countries, the punishment for stealing is very severe. Even in the medieval times, some of the punishments that they used to give to people, horrific. Like burning in molten lava, burning in pots of hot oil, were some of the punishments they used to give. Tearing people up in two. They put you on a machine, hands tied to one end, feet tied to the other end. Now as they crank this machine, these two sides pulling this man apart. With every movement of this lever, this man is being literally torn apart. Torn in two. Imagine that. You can find all this stuff on YouTube if you're really interested. Punishment in the medieval times. This is not makeup stuff. This is all very real. There was a video that we showed yesterday, and I, against my better judgment, I thought I had better not show it to you yet. We have some young children here as well. There were some quite disturbing images. Maybe the adults could stomach it, but I'm not sure about the young children. So I thought perhaps maybe another day. You know, some of the punishments that weren't even shown on that video, because I did some research on this, you know, what were some of the punishments that people had to suffer because of not knowing the answer to what? Who you are. Not knowing the answer to who am I, some of the punishments that people had to suffer. One involves, so man's tied to some kind of bed, and they take an iron bucket. You put mice into it, or rats into it. Now you hold the bucket against this man's stomach. Okay? And they put fire onto the other end. So now the bucket's fire heating up. Because it's going red hot, the rats want to find a way to escape because they can't bear the heat. You can't go the other way because they can't chew iron. But what can they chew? The other end, which is your stomach. So now they'll start chewing at it, gnawing at it, until they have found their escape route, which is the other side of your body. Punishments in the medieval times. So you might say, that's in the medieval times. We are more advanced now. Let's not worry about those times now. No, people don't get punished like that now. They might not punish you like that in the prisons. But what about the bad guys? People who don't like you very much. You think only you have access to YouTube? You think only you have access to the internet? What about that guy who doesn't like you because you gave a furtive glance to his wife? What about that guy or that woman who doesn't like you because you just spoke a little bit too nicely to her husband and she doesn't like you for that fact? Now she wants to teach you a lesson. All she has to do is find a hitman. This is how I want you to treat her. Officially, yes, doesn't happen anymore. But nothing stopping anyone from doing it if they really wanted to. All because you don't know who you are. All because you don't know why you find a girl beautiful. You don't know why. I show you two girls and I ask you, which one's prettier? You say, she is. I ask you why. You say, I don't know. Do you not see the danger? If you didn't find either one pretty, then you're safe. Because then you're not going to give any glances to any of them, either of them. Right? But as long as you find one good looking, you don't want good looking to be out there, you want good looking to be with you. You want to take good looking home with you. You want to take nice home with you. You want to take lovely home with you, delicious, all this you want to take home with you. So whenever you find something pretty, something gorgeous, something delicious, something yummy, something pleasurable in the outside world, what will you want to do? You'll want to make it mine. You want to make it mine. You want to make it yours. But when asked the question, why do you find that pleasurable? And the answer is, I don't know. Do you not realize the danger? Because you're finding something pleasurable, which there are lots of other people in this world who also find them pleasurable. They don't know why they find it pleasurable themselves either. But they're willing to go to any extent, any length, to protect it and to keep it theirs. Some people will kill. Some people will poison you. Some people will burn your house down. They're prepared to do that. What, this is a surprise to you? Is this the first time you've heard of people doing this, these things? Burning houses down to get what they want? Poisoning people to get what they want? Killing to get what they want? Complete massacre? Genocide to get what they want? What if you're the victim? And you will be the victim for as long as you find this world pleasurable, because you're going after something that someone else also wants. For as long as you find anything pleasurable in this world, beware. Anything. Doesn't matter what it is. Even if you find this betel leaf pleasurable, if you find it pleasurable, I bet you there'll be somebody else who also finds it pleasurable. Now, when two people want the same thing, that's called a competition. When two people want the same thing, that's called a competition. And when there's a competition, there has to be a what and a what? A winner and a loser. Winner gets all. Loser not only not gets anything, but also loses their head. And you don't know why you're telling me you like this betel leaf. You don't know why you find this pleasurable. This is just an example. Hope you're getting the idea. You don't know why you like this. When you don't know why you like this, but nevertheless you have to suffer the consequences, because you're going to make effort to get this, get your hands on this, to acquire this through whatever means, because you want to acquire what you desire. And you don't know why. That is so dangerous. So, if you discover the answer to who you are, you'll also know why you find this world pleasurable. You'll also know why you find one color prettier than the other. You'll know why you like chocolate cake more than vanilla cake. You'll know why you like strawberry cake more than eclairs. You'll know the answers to these questions. You can't say just because. That's not a reasonable answer. This is what the Buddha comes into this world to teach us. Why do people like things? Why do people attach themselves to things? Because for as long as you're attached, you have to accept the package of suffering that comes along with it. Because whatever you're attached to, you will go to great lengths to acquire it. Think about your own lives for a moment. Aren't the things that you went through a lot of energy, effort and time to acquire the very things that you attached yourselves to? Name one thing that you went through to acquire that you weren't attached to. You went through and you made effort to acquire it, but you weren't attached to it. Can you name one thing? Anything? Why did you go through the process of labor? 9 months and 10 months of pain to have children. Is it because you didn't want them? Is it because you didn't want them? No, it's because you wanted them. So you were attached to them even before they came into this world. Yes or no? Yes. Why did you build yourself a home? Forget the fact that you need a home, you need a shelter. Well, I've got shelter and it's just a hut. Your shelter is not a hut. Yours a multi-storied hut. It's a hut that's spread over several acres. Mine's several square feet. Why? Why did you go through all that process to acquire it? Because you didn't want it? Or because you really wanted it? Because you wanted it. Think about your wardrobes for a moment. How many items of clothing do you have in your wardrobe? How many pairs of shoes do you have? How many hats and ties do you have? How many necklaces and watches and gold rings and earrings do you have? How many watches do you have? If all you need is to tell the time, well, all you need is one watch. How many watches do you wear at the same time? How many pairs of shoes can you wear at the same time? How many sets of clothes can you wear at the same time? How many beds can you sleep on at the same time? How many rooms can you sleep in at the same time? How many houses can you be in at the same time? So why do you need 10? How many cars can you drive at the same time? Then why do you need 20? So you can't be telling me it's because I need to get from A to B. That's not true. You can't be telling me it's because I need shelter. Think about your kitchen, your pantry. Open up the cupboards in your mind. All the foodstuffs that are stuck in the shelves. Open your fridge mentally. All the items of food that you have in there. Open your freezer. All the items of food that's stuck in there. You can't tell me you got them all just because you wanted to feed your hunger. How many meals can you eat a day? So why do you have a packet of mixture? Mixie? Bites? Was that for hunger? No, you just had a meal. Only 10 minutes later you thought you wanted to have a cup of tea. Why biscuits? Is that for hunger? That's a snack. Why snack? Why chocolate? Why soft drinks? Is that because you're thirsty? What's wrong with water? Look at all the things you're attached to. Look at all the things you find pleasurable. This is what I'm trying to get to. All these things you find pleasurable. I'm not going to ask how many wives do you have. Why? Pleasurable. When you find the outside world pleasurable, you will go through whatever you need to acquire it. And for that you will sacrifice yourself. Isn't going to work a sacrifice? Who here loves going to work? Would you not rather spend your time with your family? Every time, every hour, every minute you spend at work, is that not time spent away from your family? But are you not spending time at work, sacrificing time that you could be doing the things you like to do at work, only so that you can acquire more things that you find pleasurable? Because you need to earn lots of money. Money to feed your hunger is not enough. Money to give you shelter is not enough. Money to make you feel better when you're ill, that's not enough. Money to put clothes around your body to protect you from the elements, that's not enough, is it? That's why you went after that promotion. That's why you're moonlighting. That's doing another job at night. That's why you're working overtime. That's why you're working weekends. Earn more money. Because you're not satisfied with what you have. You just want more. More, more, more and more. And the answer to that is because you find the world out there pleasurable. The more you find the world pleasurable, the more you will exert yourself to acquire all these things. But here's the thing. You will go through this process of exerting yourself to acquire all these things. And now, every time you acquire something, you also get another job with it, along with that. You get a job. The job of security guard. The job of a security guard. No? You bought home a new car. Now who's its security guard? Yeah, not me. Thankfully. You brought home a wife. Now who's her security guard? Until you made her yours, it was somebody else's problem. Until you made her your girlfriend, it was somebody else's problem. You couldn't care less what happened to her until you decided she was going to be my girlfriend. She was going to be my boyfriend. Now even if she sneezed, that's just one stop short of a heart attack on your part. you have become security guards for all these things that you have gone through the extent of acquiring. Do you acquired them for what purpose? For pleasure. Who here likes to do the job of a security guard? I love to be a security guard. Nothing would make me happier than being a security guard. Put your hand up. We'll get you to do it. We need one at the monastery. Well, we won't pay you for it because it's something you do out of fun, right? So we shouldn't be paying you for it. You should be willing to do it voluntarily for the sake of fun. So none of you like to be doing the job of a security guard, but yet for all the things that you have acquired, you have become a security guard. Yes or no? Who's the security guard for your home? Oh, you might say, actually, no, I have staff. I have staff who look after my property. Who has to look after your property from your staff? I repeat the question. Is there anybody you can trust 100% except for yourself? And the reason for that is because you don't know? Absolutely. You don't know who you are. You can't trust yourself. You don't know what you're going to do in the next moment. The sound comes from somewhere. You don't know what you're going to do in the next moment. You'll be turning your heads there. I get you to promise me. Hey, can you promise me you won't turn your heads? You say, yep. A noise comes from somewhere. Everyone's looking that way. You didn't plan yourself to do that, but you just don't know how your mind works. You don't know why you're even doing it. But the consequences will come to you nevertheless. You get yourself a Rolex. Now who's the security guard? You get yourself a diamond necklace. Now who's the security guard? And you tell me you don't like to do the job of a security guard. You're giving yourself this job. Nobody forced you to buy it. Did they? Nobody forced you to buy it. But you went through it. And it doesn't stop there either. Because one day is going to come when it's going to be destroyed. Either it's going to leave you or you're going to have to leave it. And the second is inevitable. You might see again. No, this is good. I like situations like that. Impromptu. Because it's good for us to understand ourselves. Someone stood up. Anyone's like, who's that? So you have helped prove my point. Now if I ask you the question, why did you look? I don't know. What if there was a punishment? Your eyes get pulled out if you look at the person that stands up. And you don't even know that there's a punishment for that. But that doesn't stop the punishment coming to you. Imagine that, you know, you go to another country. Okay? And you don't know what the legal system's there like, what the penal code is like there. That can happen, right? Some countries, you don't know, because you don't do your research beforehand. You just look at what are the top 10 places for tourists to visit. You don't go through the study of the research of what is their penal code like. What's going to happen to you if you go outside in a short skirt? You don't do that bit of research. And you think it's fun, so you step outside with a short skirt. The short skirt police comes. You get thrown into a white van, and that's the last of you. So you don't know. Likewise, you don't know the consequences that are coming to you. That's not the problem. You don't need to know the consequences. Seriously, you don't need to know the consequences. This is why I say, you know, I'm never one for to talk to you a lot about the hells. I don't spend a lot of time talking about the four great hells. I don't talk to you a lot about that. Because I know you're an audience to which talking a lot about the four great hells is not going to do much good. For most of you, at least. Because I used to be like that. I didn't believe in anything that I couldn't see with my own two eyes. That's not me saying that the four great hells don't exist, because I know that they do exist, but that is because I have seen it through the Dhamma. You can't see it with your own eye. Well, you can after you go there. But until then, there is a way you can see it through the Dhamma. Once you go through, once you have a good understanding of the dependent origination process, Paticca-samuppada, you can absolutely, with no shadow of a doubt, figure out that the four great hells do exist. It has to. And the heavens do exist. It has to. The Brahma worlds do exist, and it has to. But I'm not one to talk to you a lot about these things, because then we spend a lot of time talking about stuff that, to some extent, you already have barriers. You'll already come with preconceptions. No, I don't accept that. I mean, that is what I suppose education has done to a lot of us. Education did that to me. I sought refuge in science, not the real science. The science. Not the science, that's not what I sought refuge in. I sought refuge in science and technology that said, see what you can believe in, or rather, believe what you can see. Until then, don't take it. So anyway, I digress, coming back. The consequences, you don't have to spend a lot of time trying to understand. But you do need to spend time trying to understand, why do you do that? Why did you make that choice? And if you don't know why you made that choice, then when the consequences do come, you have to be answerable. So why do we behave like this? Let's try to understand ourselves. Why do we find yellow prettier than purple? Ignorance. What is ignorance? What is ignorance? We hear this word being thrown around a lot, right, in Buddhist philosophy? Avidya, ignorance. What is avidya? What is ignorance? Don't have to think so deep and, oh God, that's a tough question. Not knowing, see? Well done, not knowing. That's what ignorance is. If you don't know something, then you're ignorant about that fact. Simple. So I ask you, what's behind my winnowing fan? What's the answer? I don't know. Like when I ask you, why do you like that color better? And you say, I don't know. I ask you, what's behind my winnowing fan? You say, I don't know. Because, well, you can't see what's behind it. That's why. You can't simply say it's your robe, because I might be hiding something. Right? So you can't say for sure. So therefore you're going to have to say, I don't know. Now I'll turn it around. No, I'm not going to. I'm going to tease you. Once I do turn it around, or you walk behind me, and then see what's on the other side, now you can say for sure. And then you move out of ignorance into the realm of wisdom, knowledge. Knowledge and wisdom aren't necessarily the same thing, but let's treat it to be the same for now. So for that to happen, either you have to walk up behind me and see what I'm hiding, if I'm hiding anything behind my winnowing fan, or I have to turn it around and show it to you, right? So you have to see before you accept. Agreed? There is no accepting before you see in Buddhist philosophy. That's not how it works. Not in Buddhist philosophy, because otherwise there would be blind faith. Are you not blind to what I'm holding behind my winnowing fan? You might as well be blind, right? Because even if you can see and your eyes are working fine, you can't see what I'm holding behind this. So therefore, this space and what's behind it, you're blind to. Yes or no? Yes. So if I tell you I'm holding X and you accept it, that's blind faith. Yes or no? Yes. Why? Because you're blind. You can't see what I'm holding behind this. You're just going to have to take my word for it. But the day I turn this round, or remove this, move this out of the way, or you come behind me and see it, now is that blind faith? No, now that's conviction. This is the difference between bhakti and shraddha. To use the singular words, bhakti, andha bhakti, there's no andha shraddha. Because shraddha or conviction is where one moves from blindly accepting something to accepting it because you have seen it for yourself. From that point forward, you're not accepting it because someone said so. Then your understanding about whatever that might be is not because someone said this is how it is. You have seen it for yourself. That is what Shraddha is. That is what conviction is. So I ask you again the question, who are you? Right now you're saying, I don't know. You don't know. Because you can't answer the question, why do you like this color better than the other? And you're saying, you don't know. In other words, you're saying, I don't know who I am. Because I'm asking a question about yourself, aren't I? And you're saying, I don't know. And that's because you're ignorant. This is what ignorance is. Ignorance about oneself. Now, did I just offend you by saying you're ignorant? Don't take it in that sense. That's not what I mean. You're knowledgeable about a lot of things in the world, about the world. You know, there'll be scientists among you, doctors and lawyers and philosophers and all sorts of people, engineers, right? So whatever field you're knowledgeable in, then you're knowledgeable in that field. But what I'm saying is that in the field of who are you, you're ignorant. Ultimately, what you're saying is, I know a lot about the outside world, but very little about me. You have become experts. You have PhDs. Some of you may be professors about the outside world, but are you a professor about yourself? Do you have a PhD on yourself? This is what Buddhist philosophy helps us get to. I'm going through a study as much as you are. To me, coming to this monastery was me deciding to do a course. I'm doing a course. In this course, I learn about myself. The courses that I took up before coming to the monastery, before becoming a monk, before ordaining, I learnt about the world out there. Science taught me about the world. Chemistry, physics, math, biology, all these subjects taught me all about the world out there. But none of them taught me about me, about who I am. But Buddhist philosophy, that's what I'm learning. This is the course I'm on. I don't know how long this course is, but I know one day I will graduate. And on my graduation certificate it will say, you have discovered who you are. And below it will say, within braces, you have discovered that you are nobody. Does that sound a bit like Greek? This is what my certificate will say the day I graduate. But I haven't graduated yet. So I'm still going through this course. This is the course of arahatship. That's where we are getting to. And there are several stages you have to pass along this study. Generally, in the time of the Buddha, to even come into this course, to this program, you will have had to take a test, an entry test. And in that entry test, they will have tested to make sure that you know what this course is about, you know what this course is for, and you know why you'll be spending your time here. And that test was the test of Sotapanna. Back in the Buddha's day, a lot of people who ordained were already Sotapannas. But that's not so much now. Some people take this course externally, like you. You're not resident. You're external scholars. You take this course externally. But once a week you come here for lectures. Don't worry, you'll get the same certificate. But it just might take a bit longer. But you have plenty of time, don't you? Unlike me? Unlike Dasahamru? Who's only 15 yet? Unlike him, you've got plenty of time. So don't rush. Don't worry. Take your time. You can either come and do this internally, be a full-time student, and get this done. Maybe 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years. Or you can do it externally. And maybe take twice or three times as long. Because you have to do it amongst all the other things you're doing. I studied at the Open University at one point in my life, and I experienced that myself. I did some courses while I was in work. And that was quite an experience, trying to balance work and family and education all at the same time. So that's what you're doing right now. You also get given homework. Sometimes you don't have the time to do your homework, because the thing is, we don't mark your homework. We only ask, have you done your homework? And you say, you just smile. I have to read between the lines. Generally, a smiley say, I forgot. But here, you can't not do your homework. Because we have a teacher who's very strict. And I'm glad that he is. He's very strict. You know, if you sometimes think that he's very strict when he delivers his sermons, he's very straight with the words he chooses, he's very forthright, there's no hanky-panky with him, right? He says how it is. Well, imagine that 10 times more at the monastery. There's no opportunity to waste time. No opportunity for nonsense. No opportunity to just hang about, do nothing, to idle. There's no opportunity for that. It's very strict. And it ought to be. That's how it ought to be. That's how it should be. Because why did we come here? Why did we come here? To pass time? Pass time? No. To get our degree, to graduate. I don't want to be here forever. Hell, I want the opportunity to go back and explore the world. Wouldn't that be nice? But first, I want my degree. I want to graduate first, get my certificate, and then I'll go and explore the world again. I'll go traveling again. I'll go see the world again. I might even get married again. I mean, you know, the world's your oyster. There's so much more out there to see. But first, I need to get myself my degree. But will I be going after I get my degree? They say, no, you won't. We'll see. Let's leave that to time. So anyway, the point I'm trying to emphasize is realize that you're doing an external program. If I'm making X effort, you must be making 10X effort. Because ultimately, everything else that you achieve in life is only a means to an end. And that end is what? The inevitable end? Have you not all been handed out a warrant? What warrant? Absolutely. If someone's been handed a death warrant, have you know, fugitives who run away from the law because they've been handed a death warrant? What are they constantly nervous, anxious, and worried about? Getting caught. Why? Because what have they been handed? A death warrant has been issued in their name. So therefore they're always running. They're always running for nothing other than escaping the inevitable. Have you not all been handed a death warrant? Do you have a choice about it? So the day you came into this world was when you were given it, your death warrant. And you're all fugitives. Who's a fugitive? A wrongdoer who's running from the law, right? So we are all fugitives, because a death warrant has been handed over to us, but we are running. We are trying to try and escape the inevitable. One day we are gonna get caught, whether we like it or not. No matter how fast our little legs can carry us, no matter how far away you go, we're going to get caught. And on that day, we're going to have to face our death. But like a fugitive, are you behaving like a fugitive though? Are you behaving like a fugitive who has been handed over their death warrant? No. Because a real fugitive who's been issued a death warrant is always conscious, is always aware, is always watching either side. Have they come? Have they come to get me? That's his biggest concern. Whether he's eaten tonight is not his biggest problem. Whether he has a bed to sleep is not his biggest problem. He just wants somewhere to crash for the night. But what are you mostly concerned about? Looming death? You've been issued a death warrant, but that doesn't come to your mind most of the time. Chances are that only comes to your mind when you come back to do your weekly course. Because it's not right to talk about death out there, is it? In the world out there? It's a forbidden topic, is it not? Don't talk about death. It's not nice to talk about death. Is it nice to talk about death with people? Hey, how old is Achi Amma? She's 97 now. Has she not died yet? You're not going to be invited there again. Because you have just touched on a forbidden topic. People are overly sensitive to the inevitable. People don't like to be talking about growing old, do they? If you look at someone and say, hey, you've aged, that's considered to be so rude. That's a serious insult. You know, when I was in Sri Lanka, in my younger years, among friends, you know, you just tease each other. Hey, fatso. You know, as friends, we used to tease each other. You know, someone, you could see them putting on a bit, you'd say, you're fatso. That's not a nice word, that's a rude word, so don't use that anybody. I'm just saying, as, you know, we used to do that, mischievous, right, at that age. So I didn't realize that it was rude to point out that someone has put on. So when I went to the UK, and sometimes we would see people maybe once a year, and I might say, hey, you've put on a bit. Everyone would start frowning at you. That's so, how rude. How rude of you to say that. Never say like that again. People used to admonish me. Why? Because people don't like to talk about things like that. People don't like to talk about death. People don't like to talk about old age. People don't like to talk about cancer. How many people that you might know don't like to even use the word cancer? They, you know, he's got the C thing. He's got the C. Because they don't like you to say the word. Like it's an ill omen. Ridiculous, if you ask me. It's the inevitable. Like Guru Hamdru says, you're just waiting at the baggage counter, waiting for the baggage to come to you. It's on the conveyor belt. You're just waiting for your baggage. And on that baggage you've got cancer, you've got, yeah, you name it, heart attack. You've got your years as they go up, right? 30, 31, 32, 33, 34. They're all going on that conveyor belt as well. And then ultimately you have death. So it's all coming, but it's not okay for us to talk about it. Forbidden. Because people don't like to talk about these things. You know the reason people don't like to talk about these things? Because when you talk about these things, you begin to lose interest in the pleasurable world out there. And you begin to focus your attention, your effort, on trying to find a solution to this problem. And that's of no interest to anybody. There's no benefit in you losing interest in this materialistic world and focusing your energy, focusing your interest on trying to get the hell out of here. Is there anyone who's going to benefit from that? Except maybe the funeral directors. Just think about the beauty parlor, right, down the street. The reason that they have business out of you is because you're constantly contemplating on old age and death? No. It's because you're constantly contemplating on how can I look beautiful? How can I look prettier tomorrow? There's a function tomorrow and everyone's coming. I want to be the centerpiece of attention. That's why. Because people don't like you trying to remove yourself from this cesspit. People don't like you to remove yourself from this world because they depend on you. They depend on you to make a living. How much can people make out of me? Okay, beauty parlor. What are they going to make out of me? How much is BMW going to make out of me? Or any of the car companies for that matter? Nothing. How much is the entertainment industry going to make out of me? Film producers, directors, musicians, how much are they going to make out of me? How much are media companies who print newspapers, magazines, right? How much are they going to make out of me? Nothing. People who make watches, necklaces, the things that you like, right? Fancy dresses, smart shoes, how much are they going to make out of me? Absolutely nothing. Why? Because today, my focus is not on how do I make myself attractive. My focus is not on finding pleasurable things in the outside world. Today I'm realizing that pleasure does not exist in the outside world, so there's nothing that anybody out there can do to please me. Much the same as there's nothing that anybody out there can do to upset me mentally. These are things I do unto myself. The more I practice this path, the more I go through this course, every day passes by, I begin to realize more and more and more that pleasure is not something that can be achieved from the outside world. Therefore, I'm beginning to realize when I hear a sound, there's no point in me turning my head and looking at it. Why did I used to turn my head towards it and look at it? What was I looking for? Pleasure. We do everything in our life for pleasure. To be happy, to put it quite simply. Can you name one thing you do in your life that you do to not be happy? Can you name one thing? Why do you pay the bills? So you don't get kicked out. So your telephone connection does not get disconnected. Why does that matter? Because? Well, that's how you keep connected. To what? The outside world, which is beautiful. So you can't give me one thing that you do that you don't do for the purpose of pleasure. Right from waking up in the morning? Why do you wake up in the morning? Because there's lots of things you have to get done through the course of the day. One, go to school. Why? Study. Why? Get a good job. Why? Earn money. Why? So you can buy lots of lovely things. Why? For happiness. Once you go through school, now go to work. Why? Well, just cut out the school bit and keep the rest. Why do you go to the kitchen? Make yourself a cup of tea. Make yourself some food. Why? For what? For pleasure. For happiness. Why do you need a cup of tea? Well, your throat's dried up. Why do you need food? Because you're hungry. These are problems that you have to solve on a daily basis. And solving these problems is what brings you happiness. Yes or no? Happiness is the result of solving problems. Yes or no? Can you name one time where you experienced happiness that was not in solving a problem? Newborn child. Did that not put a smile on your face? When you held your baby for the first time in your hands? Why did that make you so happy? Did you not just find an answer to a problem you had? You want a day? Child. You wanted to have a baby. That problem was solved. So you just found yourself an answer and that made you happy. For that happiness to come into your life, what did you have to have before that? A problem. A mother or a woman becomes pregnant. She didn't want to become pregnant. Now? She's with child, but she doesn't want to be. Now she's regretting. How many babies get thrown in the toilets every day? Abortions. Why? Because you weren't happy about that. You didn't want it. That's why two examples. One, baby brings happiness. Two, baby doesn't bring happiness. So happiness is not something that baby brings. Well, it can't be. Otherwise, baby has to bring happiness to both mothers. So happiness is not something that baby brings. Happiness is answer to a problem. When there was a problem that had to be answered, and now that problem has been answered, now you find happiness. So for that happiness to come into your life, you have to have a problem. Do you like happiness? Do you like to be happy? Of course. So what must you like? Absolutely. So don't complain now, right? I've got so many problems in my life. Yay, throw a party! Because what do you also have? Opportunities. That's what people like to say, right? Don't think of challenges, think about opportunities. Don't think about problems. Don't people say like that in the workplace? Don't talk about problems, talk about opportunities. Oh, I can't believe I used to say these words. To young apprentices who used to train under me while I was in my workplace, I used to tell people, don't think about problems, they're opportunities. Shoot me somebody. I regret that I used this mouth to encourage people to embrace this world, to find happiness in this world. I regret it. Lots of things I regret in that 30 years of my life, where I encouraged young people to embrace this world, to make this their world, to be king, to be the best, to be number one. I don't know how much I've been cursed. Today I realize how wrong that was. Because today I realize this is not a place to hang around. Today I speak to young people, lots of young people. I think earlier on this week, Wednesday, or other. A young girl visited the monastery, 17 or 18 years of age, came in with her mother. Similar story to the one I told you about some time ago. This girl, again, wanting to commit suicide. Because she's been put under so much stress to get through her A-level exams. Her tuition master constantly telling her, no, go for A's, right? We don't want anything else from you. A's, right? A's, come on, girl, A's. Nothing else. Don't come back to me and say, I didn't get my A's. Get me my A's. That's all the tuition master says, A's. I'm not saying all tuition masters are like that. This is not a stereotyping. I'm just saying this is what the girl told me. A couple of days before she visited, she had screamed at home. She lives only with her mother. Father passed away when she was younger. Imagine the mother, the state of mind she must be in. This girl had been hyped up by all the people that she had met in her life. Everyone saying, go for it, girl, go for it. Get out there. Be the best. Be number one. Don't settle for anything short of the best. Now so much stress put into this young child's mind. So much stress. She's like a volcano waiting to erupt. A volcano that's bubbling, waiting to erupt. Causing calamitous damage to everybody around her. Every life that must have touched that life. Destroyed. Had she not come to the monastery. So the mother had been listening to these sermons. And she came looking for us. So I sat down with her. You know, the other day I was talking to you about how I've managed to cut down my sleep because I've met somebody who only slept for 4 hours, a young man who's got a family he has to feed and so on. Remember what I told you at the end of that? Hopefully I'm not going to find someone who only sleeps for 3 hours a day. Oh, bugger. I met that girl. She only gets 3 hours of sleep a day. 3 hours of sleep a day. Put under so much stress. Studying with feet in buckets of water. Trotting up and down, trying to memorize stuff. Stressing her parents out. Or at least her mother. I asked her, is this what you came into this world for? To pass your A-level exams? Is that what you bargained your human life for? To get through A-levels? Why A-levels? Well, the same reason you went to school. So you can get through A-levels, get into a good university, get yourself a good job. Come on, keep going. Then earn yourself a lot of money, and then do what? Raise a family, and then get all the things that you love, because the world is pleasurable. See, when you start there, how people's lives are destroyed. The world is pleasurable, and you don't know why. As simple as I ask you, why do you like this color? Beautiful. Why? I don't know. Your life can be destroyed because you don't know the answer to that question. The lives of everyone in your life can be destroyed because you don't know the answer to that question. You like chocolate cake. Why? I don't know. It's just yummy. Why? I don't know. That can destroy your life. Not knowing the answer to that question can destroy your life. Bold statement, but if you think it through, it can destroy your life. Because add up all the things that you find pleasurable. Now you have such a hefty burden on your shoulders. Because these are all the things that have been, that you have been kind of brainwashed, really. All these drushti put into your mind. These are all these pleasurable things out there. This is how you can be happy. There's no other way to be happy. You have to acquire all these beautiful things out there. Go get them, boy, get them. Come on, girl, get them. All I can hear is when parents say that, all I can hear is, ja, 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 puta. That's all I hear. Is that why parents bring children into this world? To torment them? To suck their lifeblood out of them? To torture them? They might as well have just been a Gandharva. You know, seriously. They were better off where they were. Having brought them into this human world, having given them flesh and bones, now you torture them. Show them that this world is pleasurable. Take them through the same process that you went through, except 10 times more fiercely. Because all those hopes that you couldn't achieve, all those disappointments that you have about yourself, now you want to achieve them through your children. Tell me if you've never felt that way. Maybe not now, thanks to the Dhamma. A lot of parents, they'll put their children through all the things that they couldn't achieve for themselves, because otherwise they feel undermined. They feel a lack of achievement, so they put their children through it. Go get it. I couldn't, you get it. I tried to be a doctor, I couldn't, so what should you do now? This is child abuse, if you ask me. This is child abuse. Because a child didn't come into this world for that. An innocent child doesn't know right from wrong. An innocent child doesn't know how to actually seek happiness in this world. And then the people that surround this young, this innocent child, teach this child, hey, this is how you be happy. Worst among them is parents. Something I've said to my mother. Worst among them is parents. Because that's who a child trusts most. You abuse that trust. You abuse a child's trust. Because you show them paths that are only going to take them to their death, disaster. Because think about this, ladies and gentlemen, everything you've achieved in your life so far, except for the merits that you have acquired and the understanding of the Dhamma that you have acquired, is a means to an end. Whatever amount of money you have right now, where do you, at some point you're going to have to leave it all. Yes or no? All the property that you have? You could be a citizen of 10 countries. Until what point? You know the answer. You could have 10 houses. You could have 100, 200, several hundred acres of land. All until one point. At that point, everything is lost. So aren't all those things a means to an end? The means that got you to that end? It's them that took you to that end. You went to that end of death doing nothing other than acquiring those means. Those are the very means that brought you that end. Are you getting my point? It's not just you went through life acquiring them until you get to that end. No, those were the things that got you to that end. You aged faster because you were so keen on acquiring all those things. You fell ill sooner. You got weaker. You became frail quicker than the average Joe. Why? Because you went through exhorting your body and mind, acquiring all those things. Those were the means to your end. All a man's done in his life is work hard, toiled, labored. I mean, sometimes we sing praises about people like that, don't we? All his life he's worked really hard, like at an eulogy, right? At the funeral you sing praises about people. You know, this man, he's been a very, really hard working man, right? All his life he worked for his family, for himself, for his country, right? Great. Question is, what did he do for himself? Now you say, rest in peace. The fact that you're saying rest implies what has he been doing all his life? Toiling. That's why he has to now rest in peace. He couldn't rest in peace while he was alive. How could he have rested in peace? Because what did he bring unto himself? Suffering. Every time he found something attractive, something pleasurable, what did he do? Now I have to acquire what I desire. Therefore you have to go through the process of acquiring it. Work hard for it. And then once you've acquired it, now you have become a security guard, so now you have to protect it, preserve it, only for as long as it comes to its natural end. Or it's time for you to bid farewell. Either of these two things has to happen, right? Either you go first or your children go first. If your child goes first and you have five of them, you've still got four left. But if it's time for you to go, now all five go at once. So really, actually, you know, if you're so attached to your children, which one's better? The death of your death or the death of your children? Yes. If you're really attached to your children, and you have several of them, right? Which one's better? Your death or the death of your children? Death of your children. Because if one goes, you have the other to pacify yourself. If both go, then at least you can make another one. But after the moment of your death, now you have to say goodbye to all of them at once. So the suffering you feel when at the death of one child times five at once, because you have to say goodbye goodbye to all of them at once. So if you're really attached to your children, then please hope that your child dies before you. Otherwise you're going to go insane. You're going to lose your mind. But you won't have a mind to lose. You're dead. So this is the human factory. This is the human factory that we've all been going through. This process that has been pre-engineered, pre-designed. The rules of the game were set right from the beginning. We didn't know any better. So we came and started playing. Some of us, halfway through this game, realized this game is rigged. It's not one you're ever going to win. I need to get the hell out of here. Others don't even have the insight to think about that. Others simply go through the process, just waiting for the inevitable death, that death warrant, because that was issued right when you entered this game. You didn't get a get out of jail free card, you got a death warrant the moment you started playing that game. Shocking. shocking that people don't have an opportunity to listen to this truth. It's pathetic that people, human beings, don't have the opportunity to listen to this ultimate truth. Simply because you can't answer this very simple question, who are you? You can't break free from this process. That young child, what a pity. Gladly her mother was able to bring her here. I think they came from very far away. Several hours on a bus, had left early in the morning. Somehow she had managed to pluck the courage up to bring the child to us and talk to her. She was crying all the way through as I was talking to her. Not once did she stop crying until I had said what I wanted to say. She was crying because she was releasing all that tension that had built inside of her. As I was explaining to her, Dua, the reason you came into this world is not to sit a blooming A-level exam. That's just one small piece to get you to happiness. But that is not happiness. Don't make that the goal of your life. I want you all to understand this. Ease off on your children. That's not to say, let them do what the hell they like. You're responsible adults, your parents. Show them the right path and encourage them to walk that path, like Guru Hamdra does for us, like Budhu Hamdra did for us. Just because I'm a monk, just because I'm at the monastery, doesn't mean I'm going to get to where I want to be. I need instruction, I need guidance, I need constant encouragement. So do the same for your children. Show them the right path, because they don't know any better. Because if you don't instruct them, they're going to get instruction from someone other than you. That's the danger. And that someone other than you will not care two hoots about what happens to them. Will not care. Not a tuppence worth. What happens to them. All they'll be interested in is self-worth. Is what can they get out of your child. Because ultimately, they, just as much as your child, is in despair, is desolate, has no idea about what's going on around them. All they know is the world is pleasurable and your child is just part of that world. So the world is pleasurable and therefore your child is? What? Come on, say it. Child is? Does it hurt you to say the word? I'll say it for you. Your child is pleasurable. Your child is pleasurable. How does that make you feel? There are people out there to whom your child is pleasurable. The sights, the sounds, the smells, the tastes, and the touch that comes from your child is pleasurable. For as long as that is what their belief is, where do they draw the line? For as long as they are willing to go to any extent to achieve that pleasure, where are they willing to draw the line? And if no one's watching, then why bother drawing a line? If no one's watching, for someone who doesn't even believe in karma vipaka, why bother drawing a line? There's no such thing as deeds and results. So why bother drawing a line? All I need to worry about is my pleasure. And hey, I've just found something that is pleasurable. And that's your child. I can tell you enough stories. Real stories. Of things that happen to children because parents were not careful enough. And that's not to say always watch where your child is going. I don't need to tell you that. You'll know that yourself. I don't need to tell you, be careful about who your child associates, what friends they have, check them, check their phones. I don't need to tell you that. You know that already. What I do need to tell you though is, give your child the gift of Dhamma. Because if all you're interested in is teaching your child science and technology, physics, chemistry and biology, sociology, economics and robotics, then beware. Because they'll lure your child in. That's how it's going to happen. They're not even going to take them by force. They'll lure your child in to their deadly traps. And once caught, you might as well forget that. You might as well forget you even had a child. And their deadly traps, the luring, you can't even begin to imagine what they'll be ready to do. Because again, your child believes the world is pleasurable. So it's going to be a give and take. Hey Putta, look what I've got for you. Is this not pleasurable? Oh yes, well come to me. You really must understand the danger that's looming, ladies and gentlemen. And you know as adults, the world that you used to live in as youngsters is not the world it is today. Do you not know that? You know that better than I do. I've only been around for 30 years. There are some of you who've been around for much longer than I have. My 30 years of experience tells me that this world is going down the drain. I didn't say cesspit for no reason. Well, then you should know better. The world that used to be when you were growing up is not this world. But that's when you decided, one day I'm going to have children. Because that's what you learned. That's what everyone that came into your life said. That's the drushti they put into your mind. Have a child. You'll be happy. So that day, that seed got planted. And that day you started vexing. So the only way to relieve yourself from vexation, you didn't know any other way. You didn't know that it was attachment that causes suffering. You didn't know any of those things. You didn't know it was ignorance that led to attachment. All you knew was, now I'm vexing for a child, so I had better have one. What do I need to have a child? Well, first get myself a wife. Get myself a husband. Because that seed was planted way back then. There are some who come and tell us that they even regret having children. Because for some of them, they really want to dedicate their lives to practicing the path now. Some of them want to go into robes. But they can't because of duties and responsibilities that they have. But putting that aside, now they realize that this world that they brought their children into it's a zoo. It's a forest with tigers and bears and dangerous animals just waiting to ensnare their children. But now you can't reverse, you can't retrace your steps and, you know, it's again, no return, no refund. So the only way you can address this problem is to give them the gift of Dhamma. Because if you can give them the gift of Dhamma, then your child will begin to understand that, hey, I've been thinking that this world is pleasurable, but really no, there is no pleasure out there. In other words, you know, teach your children who they are. Teach your children the answer to who am I? Who are you? Make sure that they can answer that question. At 40 years of age, you still don't have the answer to that question. Don't leave that same plight to your children. At the age of 7, they must be able to answer that question. Parents, challenge to you. At the age of 7, your children must be able to answer the question of, who am I? They must be able to explain to you why is it when they hear a sound, they feel the need to turn their head and look at it. They must be able to explain to you why when a slice of chocolate cake is put in front of their noses, their mouth starts salivating. They must be able to explain. You can't just say that's just biology. Well, that's not going to save you from the consequences. Biology. That's just the way the body works. That's just physiology. That's no excuse. Because as long as that happens to your child, now what does that other man has to do? Have to do? Hey Buddha, look what I've got for you. Isn't this yummy? Come here. Now they'll just walk right into that trap. Because they haven't realized why they find this world pleasurable. You are no different. I'm talking about children, yes, but you are no different. For as long as you don't understand why you find this world pleasurable, for as long as you don't realize how it's relief from vexation that brings you pleasure, and that pleasure is not something to be found in the outside world. Vexation is the result of attachment. Attachment is the result of ignorance. Ignorance of what? Ignorance of what? The true nature of all conditioned things. The true nature of all conditioned things being vexatious, sufferable, and therefore essenceless. Anicca, dukkha, anatta. Until you understand that, people will be able to drop seeds. Seeds of wrong view into your mind. And the moment they go in, because of the ignorance that you have, the ignorance being the condition of your mind, they're gonna start to germinate. They're gonna start to take seed and they're gonna start growing. And now you're vexing. And when you're vexing for something, the only way you can be relieved from that vexation is by giving you what it is you're vexing for. If you're vexing for the next door neighbor's wife, then you can't be given anybody else to be relieved from that vexation. You have to be given next door neighbor's wife. And if next door neighbor is a hitman, if he's the biggest thug in the village, now who are you trying to have an affair with? The thug's wife. Be prepared to come home in a pulp. Be prepared to come home in a body bag. Because you couldn't answer the question of, who are you? Because you couldn't answer the question of, why do you find her pretty? Why do you find her beautiful? You didn't know the answer. For as long as you don't know the answer to that, you're going to be believing in the fact that beauty is in the person. She's beautiful, not I find her beautiful. Those two statements are worlds apart. She's beautiful and I find her beautiful. The answer lies in those two statements. If you juxtapose the two of them together, you'll find the answer. She's beautiful implies that beauty is something that's in her. I find her beautiful explains where beauty is. It's not skin deep. Don't fall for that. But it's in the eyes of the beholder. Now that is true. But take it one step further. It's in the what of the beholder? What of the beholder? Mind of the beholder. That's what they should have said. So we can qualify that now. It's in the mind of the beholder. If beauty is in the mind of the beholder, then it's not in the person. It's not in the flower. It's not in any of these things. So how did beauty come into the mind? Because before beauty came, there was a beast in the mind. That's how. This beast was the vexation. The moment someone said, hey, there's something that's beautiful, now you start to vex inside because you want to know. You want to find out. Do you not all feel this instinctive need to know and find out about the world? You walk into a room, there's a magazine. You're expected to sit there for 5 minutes. What's the first thing you do? Like, as if by habit. Your hand goes out, pulls the magazine, and you start flicking the pages. Why? You want to know, and you want to find out. You hear two people talking. Can you switch off to the conversation? Can you really? Or are you now paying close attention to that conversation? Your emotions are changing based on what conversation they're having. Someone says, "Hey, darling." Now you're going through emotional change. Inside your mind, you're going through the emotions. Come home with me tonight. Now you're going through the emotions. Why? You know, they're not even talking to you. As if. Oh, I hate you. You're going through the emotions. Just think about when you watch a teledrama. Best example. Complimented with the music that goes with the theme. Can you ever enjoy watching a horror movie with the sound on mute? Try that sometime. Put your TV on mute. Now watch a horror movie. All you see is people being thrown left, right and center. You don't know really what's going on. There's no suspense. How do you enjoy a horror movie? Because if you find pleasure, there's only one way of finding pleasure, right? Relief from vexation. So how does one enjoy a horror movie? Yes. First there has to be suspense. The devil comes from around the corner, right? Looking for this single woman who's in this home. She's trying to lock herself in her bedroom, trying to keep herself safe. The cat's meowing on the background. She sees a black cat at her window. Even as I'm saying this, are you not feeling tensed up inside? And then I say, "Wake up, it was only a dream." And you pay to watch those things, don't you? People pay to watch a horror movie. People subscribe to watch a horror movie. In reality, what they're doing is putting themselves through torture and then relieving themselves from it. Because there's a plot to the story that helps do exactly that. Taking you on these curves, on this roller coaster of vexation and relief from vexation. Vexation and relief from vexation. Vexation and relief from vexation. Constantly through that story, that's all you get. That's the plot. Really, the horror is not in the movie. The horror is really going on in your mind. That is the real horror story. They should get you on camera. Now that's a true horror story. Because that's true. Whereas the people in the movie, they're only actors. None of them are afraid. No one's scared. They're just playing their part. But you? You're scared to the bone. So that's where the real horror movie is going on. Because over there, there's no vexation, relief from vexation, vexation, relief from vexation. None of that is going on there. Because they know exactly what the plot is and they're just going through the motions. But on this side of the screen, vexation, relief from vexation. Vexation, relief from vexation. So vexation, pleasure. Vexation, pleasure. Well, in other words, a horror story. And you pay to put yourself through it. You pay to go through that experience. Maybe not you. People do. Wow. You know, in a world where people pay to watch a horror movie, I think that girl was not in such a bad place. That girl who came and she was crying about her A-levels, at least she was crying about something real. Whereas people who sit in front of a television screen, watching a horror movie, they're just putting themselves through that torture with nothing to gain. What a pity. What a pity. What a waste of human life. Is this what you came out of the hells for? To go through even more pain? Perhaps it was better there. So I say, no, it probably was better being a Gandhab. The things that you do unto yourself, having now been born a human. Perhaps it was better there. Think, please think. You know, think about your own lives. Think about what you do to your children. When your child says, Ammi, is it okay I watch this movie? I remember when I was a young child, I watched Terminator. Oh boy. Biggest mistake of my life. I think I was only about maybe 9 years of age. Bad idea. That's the day I learned off by heart. Well, by the following morning I learned off by heart. Sat Siri Dena Mahaguna Muni Dahna. Why? Because I couldn't fall asleep. I couldn't fall asleep after having watched that movie. Because to me that was horror. No one stopped me from watching it. No one stopped me from putting myself through torture. Are you okay with your child picking up a knife and playing with it? Why? Because it brings what pain? Physical pain. Physical pain is okay compared to mental pain. Physical pain doesn't lead anyone to lose their mind. But mental pain does. The reason that people sometimes go and commit suicide is because they can't bear the mental pain that comes with the physical pain. That's why. Half the time. I'm not talking about an arahant who has no purpose in being alive other than serving the needs of others. But you're okay with your child going and sitting down in front of a horror movie. Put a horror movie to a side, you're okay with your child going and watching cricket on TV. We talked about cricket, didn't we? I'm not saying don't, okay? Please don't get it that. That's not what I'm saying. It's up to you to bring your child up, however you want to bring them up. But watching a game of sport is yet again vexation and relief from vexation. Vexation and relief from vexation. Throughout the game, every ball is an opportunity, is it not? For what? Pleasure. But for that pleasure to have come your way, what has to be there beforehand? Vexation. Pelima shot. Roller coaster. So really, when your child asks you, can I play a computer game, Ammi? What they're asking your permission for is to go through mental abuse. Ami, would you mind me being abused? Okay, only for 15 minutes though. Okay, Puta, be abused, but only for 15 minutes. After that, you have to go and do your homework. I'm not saying don't let your child play a computer game. What I'm saying is give your child the gift of Dhamma. I'm so glad that there are parents here who bring their children to these sermons. This is what must happen as responsible parents. Some of them may protest. Well, even if they protested, you still send them to their tuition classes, didn't you? Their protesting didn't stop you from sending them to school when they were trying to play truant. That didn't stop you. So why then to give the gift of Dhamma? Because that is the only thing that can save them. Nothing else. If you really, really believe in Natti me saranang anyang dhammo me saranang varang, then show it then show it. Show it in action. Prove it. You can't be saying that genuinely if you don't force your children to listen to the Dhamma. Force them. Yes, I'm saying this quite responsibly. Force your children to listen to the Dhamma. They will be grateful to you later in their lives. Don't settle for excuses. And when I say force your children, what I'm also saying is force yourself. Don't give excuses. Because excuses aren't going to save you. Only give excuses which you can also give at the moment of death. If you can give an excuse then please feel free to give excuses. Because at the point of death, you're only going to be asked three questions. How much raga, desire, do you have left? How much dvesha, aversion, do you have left? How much moha, how much delusion, do you have left? These are the only three questions that you get asked. Regardless of what your answer is to this question, there is not another box in which you can write extenuating circumstances. It's not there. It's simply not there. You can't explain yourself as to why you don't have an answer that you can satisfy the examiner with. It's just not there. You just can't write anything there. There are only three boxes. How much raga, how much dvesha, how much moha. Based on that, your next stop is determined. You get given the ticket, the bus stops, and you have to get off there. That might be a human world. Are you having a good time in the human world? All having a good time? If so, come back. But remember, you're going to come back again into a world which is going to be worse than the world you're leaving. Just as much as you brought your children into a world which was worse than the one you were in, remember that you're going to come back into this world as a human into a world much worse than the one that you were a child in. Oh, it might be a trip to the Deva worlds. Oh, that's alright then, isn't it? Might be a stop in the Brahma worlds. That's alright, isn't it? Not if you understand who you are. If you understand who you are, and if your pursuits of those worlds are for the purpose of pleasure, and if you understand that pleasure is nothing other than relief from vexation, what was I saying? I've lost my train of thought now. Oh yes. So when the bus stops, you have to get off. You can't ask for an extra stop. I'll pay you later. Can you give me an extra ride? No, this is all you've got. You get what you pay for. So get off now. But if you understand that pleasure is nothing other than relief from vexation, then whether you're in the human world, the Deva world, or Brahma world, you might call it the Sugati. You might call it the blissful world. Yes, it's conducive to somebody who wants to attain Nibbana. But other than that, I don't consider this a blissful plane. I don't consider the Deva worlds or the Brahma worlds to be blissful planes unless you're there for the purpose of attaining Nibbana. Because no matter where you go, you're going to carry your mind with you. This is a mind that arises and passes away. A mind that arises and passes away can only experience the world the moment it has arisen. At the moment it has passed away, it's like the world's gone blank. Everything that you love has just disappeared out of your life. Imagine that. You wake up one morning, your house is empty. There's not a soul in the house. Your husband is gone. Your children have gone. No one's there. You're just on the floor. The bed's gone as well. No cupboards, nothing. The kitchen's empty. You walk outside into your garden. There's no one there. All your beautiful flowers, they're all gone. There's no grass, just barren land. You try next door neighbor, knock on the door, nobody's answering. You open the door, nothing. Have you watched a TV series called The Last Man on Earth? That was the last TV series I watched before I ordained. Last Man on Earth. It's quite interesting. It's this man who wakes up one morning only to discover that he's the last man alive. There's nobody else in this world. But now I can relate that to the Dhamma. Because when your mind passes away, you are the last man on earth. Because there's nobody else around you. Why? Why so? Because the mind can only know about somebody else at the moment that the mind has arisen. This is the mind arising, passing away, arising, passing away, arising and passing away. It's only at the moment the mind has arisen, where it's receiving Rupa Vedana Sanya Sankara Vijnana, that it knows that there is somebody else around us. Because ultimately, sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, this is all we can ever get from anything, right? Another person, your husband, your wife, to you, what are they? To your mind, what are they? Rupa Vedana Sanya Sankara Vijnana. And the only way they can come into your mind is through your eyes, ears, nose, tongue and touch, right? Eyes can't take wife, eyes can only take sight. Your ears can't take wife, your ears can only take sound. Your nose can't take wife, your nose can only take smell. And likewise for the rest of the organs as well. So if you're experiencing your world with eyes, ears, nose, tongue and touch, then the only things you can really take into your world are sights, sounds, smells, taste and touch. You can't take wife, you can't take house, you can't take child, you can't take car, you can't take anything else. This is all that's coming into your world. Sights, sounds, smells, taste and touch. And sight, sound, smells, taste and touch, your mind perceives as Rupa Vedana Sanya Sankara Vijnana. Rupa being the form, either Rupa Rupa, Shabda Rupa, Gandha Rupa, Rasa Rupa, Pottabha Rupa. Vedana being the knowing that something's going on, is the triggering, alert. Just received a sight, just received a sound, I've just received a smell and so on. Sanya is the label you give it. That's my wife, that's my car, that's my house, that's a label. But remember, it's not the wife that's come in. You've just given it that label. How do you misidentify someone? How can that even be possible if you are identifying the person out there? You're identifying them based on your sanya, your label that you give. That's how you misidentify someone. Yes? Sankara, all the verbs that you associate with the objects that you perceive. The verbs, the doing things that you associate. So wife, what? Cook. That's not nice, is it? Companionship. That's better. Take a physical object, car. What's the verb that comes along with it? Drive. These are the sankara. And then vijnana, that's the final decision you make about this. Combining all the other four together, the Rupa, the Vedana, the Sanya, the Sankara, put them all together and you now come to a decision. For example, this is my wife, I've just seen her. This is the label I've given her, so wife, you know, by the time you say this is my wife, everything else is also part of that package. You know, can you know your wife without the sight of her? I say wife, can you think of your wife without the sight of her? You know, at least a mental image of her? No, that has to come along with it. If you've had a wife, then the mental image has to come along with that. And when that mental image comes, then you know that the mental image has come. That's the Vedana. The fact that I'm saying wife, you know, therein is in itself is the label that we've given it. And then all the verbs that you associate, all the doing things that you associate with that person, with that object, these are the sankara. So put them all together, that's your vijnana. So this is how you feel about those things, would be the way to put it. How you sense them, essentially. This is why they say vijnana is like a magician. Because what vijnana does is not really give you the real outside world. It's the aggregate. of all these things put together, the end result, the net result, it's the summation of all these things, the Rupa, Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, put them all together, now it makes a decision. A decision that is very personal. This decision will be different to different people. It will be different. Same person can be wife on one occasion to one person, on another occasion to another person. But the way they feel about that person is going to be different at that given time. Because that net summation is going to be different for all of us. That's going to be a very personal experience. It's kind of like the personal experience, to put it simply. So in any way, Rupa Vedana Sanya Sankara Vijnana, this is the only way that we can actually know the outside world. This is the only way that the mind is going to know the outside world. But ultimately they all arise and pass away. Arise and pass away. Arise and pass away. At many billions of times a second. When it has arisen, now it's there. As in, you can see the world. You can hear, you can smell, you can taste, you can touch. But when it has passed away, you're the last man on earth. You're the last thing on earth. You're the last entity on earth because everything else in the world has just disappeared in front of your eyes. But your attachment to them still prevails. So you have just lost something that you love. How do you feel? Is that a tough question? You have just lost something that you love. How do you feel? So if that happens at a billion times a second, with every chitta that passes away, you're going through pleasure and vexation at a billion times a second, because you're going through this almost death-like experience. Imagine that. You wake up, no one's there. How are you going to feel at that time? You're going through that experience. Or you wake up and you're blind. You wake up and you're deaf. You wake up, you can't smell anything. You wake up, you're in a coma. But you know you're in a coma and you can't sense the world. How might you feel? You may not have this experience, but you can imagine how might you feel. All your sense organs have stopped functioning. Only your mind is functioning. How might you feel at that point in time? It's like your world's gone blank. Your world has just been switched off. The entire world has been switched off. This is the experience where you go through a billion of a second, billion times a second. So this is something that we have to see through wisdom. Because you and I, we can't experience individual thoughts arising and pass away. That we can't experience. But we know that thoughts arise and pass away. Otherwise you can't hear me finish a sentence. You wouldn't be able to hear me do that. Otherwise I say the first syllable and that's all you're ever going to hear. You won't hear the next syllable. Because only because it's arising and passing away, you can sense me actually give a speech or talk, or you can hear anything really, or see for that matter. So, it's through this process that we experience pleasure in this world. So pleasure is a very internal thing. It's not something that exists in the outside world. And when you understand that, you will no longer keep hunting for pleasure in the outside world. And when you're not hunting for pleasure in the outside world, there's no one that can lure you with the promise of pleasure. The reason that people can put you in the lurch. Destroy your life, bring you endless torture, is because you fall into their traps. Don't blame them. You fall into their traps. If you stop falling into their traps, then you're safe. To stop falling into that trap, all we need to do is realize this Dhamma for ourselves. So give that gift of Dhamma, first of all to yourself. Make a solemn promise to you. The new year is coming around, right? You know, people have new hopes, new dreams, new goals, new ambitions at the start of the year. Make this your new year's ambition, new year goal. Before the end of the next year, I will absolutely become a sotapan. Make that your goal. That ought to be your goal. Because there can't be anything that's more important. Everything else is a means to an end. Just go through your goals list of last year. If you weren't someone who was keen on listening to the Dhamma, all those goals that you had in your last year's list of goals for the new year, weren't they all a means to an end? The inevitable end of death? Weren't all those things that you were going to leave behind at the moment of death? Now if you understand the Dhamma, then you have found something that is with you forever. Dhammam have rakkati dhammachari. Only the Dhamma can protect you. I can't protect you. The Buddha can't protect you. The Sangha can't protect you. Only the Dhamma can protect you. Make sure you cover yourself. Give yourself that insurance plan. At least make sure that you don't go to the four great hells and you put in place plans for that. Because who can say at the end of next year, right? So this is 2019 coming round. Yeah? Next year we're going to have 2020, New Year. Can you all guarantee that you'll all be here? Can you give me a list of the order in which you're going to all start leaving? No. Then we should all equally be responsible to ourselves. We owe that to ourselves, not to anybody else. We owe it to ourselves, having worked so hard to get ourselves this chance, right, to understand the Dhamma, to come into this world in a time where the Buddha's teaching prevails. We owe it to ourselves to find our salvation, not to anybody else, not to your teachers, not to me, not to Guru Hamra, not to anybody. You owe it to yourself to find your salvation. Because you have worked so incredibly hard to get here, to get to this school, to get to this human life, to come to a place where you can understand Sinhala, you can at least understand English, you have the Dhamma, right? All these things didn't come out of chance. It came through really, really tremendous hard work. Remember, every moment you sit here, you are expending your merit. Don't forget that. Every moment you are sat here, you are expending your merit. This is why I care a lot about how you spend your time here. This is why I don't want you falling asleep when you're here. This is why I don't want you losing your attention. This is why I want you to pay 100% attention while you're here. Because you're expending your own merit. You bought a ticket to be here. Do you not want me to care about what you do with the money that you have spent to be here? Do you not want me to care about that? You have paid to be here, have you not? You have paid with something much more valuable than money can buy. You're paying with your human life to be here. Because this is merit. If you had been at a party, you're not expending as much merit. But now you're listening to the Dhamma. What is the most valuable thing in this entire universe? What's the most valuable thing? The truth, the Dhamma. There is nothing that is more valuable than that. You have just come to a show where you are given the most valuable thing ever. So to be here, you're expending a lot of merit. If you work it out per hour, you're spending a lot of money. You're spending a lot of merit to be here per hour. Don't forget that. If you're at a party, that may be, let's say merit comes in units of 100. You may be spending 100 units of merit per hour at a party. But here, you're probably spending several million an hour just to be here. Why? Because you're receiving the most precious thing in this entire universe. So should I not care if you fall asleep? What would you prefer? You're spending your merit to be here. You're not spending anything of mine to be here. I'm actually earning merit. As I'm delivering this sermon, I'm earning merit. You would be earning merit if you're listening to the sermon. But if you fall asleep, now you're just taking up someone else's seat. That's not meritorious. And if you disrupt the sermon, that's not meritorious. You're invading on someone else's opportunity of making use of their merit. This is why I am so insistent. This is why Guru Hanro always says, please check your phones on silent before you start the sermon. Please make sure you don't let anything disrupt you. Please make sure you don't disrupt anybody else, because when people are here, they're spending many several millions of merit every hour, every minute you're sat on that seat. That's a huge expense. Spend it wisely. This is why I care, and if it's wrong for me to care, then tell me so, I'll stop caring. But I don't think it's right to stop caring, because the Buddha never stopped caring. My Guru Hanro never stops caring. So I don't think I should. But if that's intruding on your independence, then tell me so. Okay, I think we head out to call it a day. Are there those among you who are looking forward to join the meditation program starting off this week? No? Okay. I only ask because otherwise I'm keeping you up. So there's a meditation program, for those of you who know, that runs weekly from Sunday evening, so it will start at about 8 o'clock Sunday evening to the following Friday. I think there are those among you who have already come along and taken part, but please only come once you have listened to the Dhamma. At least I'd say the last 6 months worth of. Otherwise it's going to be a little difficult. Because his Dhamma is not difficult, but it takes time to understand. For those of you who still would like to experience that, then there's Wednesdays where we do a one-day meditation session. You're all welcome to that, and I think I saw some familiar faces last Wednesday. So well done. For those of you who can make the time, then that's a good start. Because when you come on Wednesday, you'll get a taster for what the week is going to be like. And remember, this is guided meditation, not guided recitation. This is not guided recitation. So you don't say what I say. That's not how it works. You have to come prepared to meditate, and meditation is reflecting on the Dhamma. I will tell you what you need to reflect on, but you have to be capable of reflecting on it yourself. And for that, you have to have understood the Dhamma to some extent. So if you are new to concepts like anicca, what is anicca, what is dukkha, what is anatta, then you won't be able to make much use of those programs. But we'll continue to talk about them. I think last week also someone asked me, can you please explain in a bit more detail what anicca, dukkha, anatta is. And I'll be happy to do that. And we'll maybe spend some time next week talking about that. But I wanted to make sure that, because we have some new faces now, I need to cater to a very varying audience. Because there are young children, there are adults, there are people who've been coming along several years now, or at least several months, and then there are others who are coming in afresh. So it's not an easy task doing this, but we'll keep trying. So next week, I'll go back to the basics. What anicca is, what dukkha, what anatta is, in the hope that if there are any here who have still any gaps in your understanding, then you'll be able to get that. And with that understanding, you'll be prepared to come along to meditation programs as well. Because in those programs, especially the weekly ones, we sit you down and we get you to give us a sermon. How's that for size? You have to give us a sermon. Madam? Sorry, not next week. Do we not? No, we don't have the program, right? What did he say? That we have it. So that's the Wednesday. So I think I was mistaken in that we don't have the weekly program this week. That's right, yeah. We don't have the weekly program this week. So he said he was going to do an extra program, I think the following week. the following week. Not this week, as in not the week that starts coming Monday, but the following week, I think there'll be a program, but we'll give more information about that later on. But in any case, you have to come prepared for it. You have to come to reflect the Dhamma, because a lot of the time we'll be silent. You will be reflecting on the Dhamma. I won't be saying much. So it's not guided recitation. It's guided meditation. That's what I meant by that. And you will be giving me a sermon and several of our monks to demonstrate your understanding of the Dhamma. So we'll be asking you questions. We'll be cross-examining you. Sometimes we'll be asking questions to throw you off the rails. Don't worry. Because it's when you explain something to somebody, what happens? That you really get to understand it. And you find out gaps in your knowledge and your understanding. And that's a really, really positive experience. People usually start to sweat when they sit down in front of us. But the first thing I say is, don't worry, I don't bite. Right? And then, so there are two sessions. The first session, they do a sermon. And then we help them to identify the gaps in their knowledge. And then they do it another time before the end of the week. So that's a really, really good experience for you to give a sermon to a Swami Nuhanse. And that's meritorious. See? Okay. So try and make use of those opportunities. We are here to help you if you want to help yourself. If you don't want to help yourself, then really there's not much that we can offer you. But you have to want to help yourself. Right, so we'll chant the Arya Maitri and we'll call it today. Is it the English version today? Yeah, okay. Reflect on these phrases, on the meaning behind these phrases, and try and relate to your life experiences on how this is true to you. May I and all beings in all worlds be freed from the fire of birth, freed from the fire of decay, freed from the fire of illness, freed from the fire of death, freed from the fire of sorrow, freed from the fire of lamentation, healed with the ultimate bliss of Nibbana, healed with the ultimate bliss of Nibbana, healed with the ultimate bliss of Nibbana. May I and all beings in all worlds be freed from the fire of suffering, freed from the fire of discontentment, freed from the fire of exhaustion, freed from the fire of disappointment, freed from the fire of clinging on to the five aggregates, healed with the ultimate bliss of Nibbana, healed with the ultimate bliss of Nibbana, healed with the ultimate bliss of Nibbana. May I and all beings in all worlds be freed from the suffering of samsara, freed from the disease of samsara, freed from the fear of samsara, freed from the fire of samsara, freed from the flames of samsara, freed from the burning of samsara, freed from the sorrow of samsara, freed from the lust of samsara, freed from the clutches of samsara, healed with the ultimate bliss of Nibbana, healed with the ultimate bliss of Nibbana, healed with the ultimate bliss of Nibbana. The karma worlds are in despair, May I and all beings be freed from the karma worlds. The rupa worlds are in despair. May I and all beings be freed from the rupa worlds. The arupa worlds are in despair. May I and all beings be freed from the arupa worlds. All worlds are in despair. May I and all beings be freed from all the worlds. Nibbana is the only salvation. May I and all beings attain Nibbana. Nibbana is the only salvation. May I and all beings attain Nibbana. Nibbana is the only salvation. May I and all beings attain Nibbana. Letting go is the only salvation. May I and all beings let go. Detachment is the only salvation. May I and all beings be detached. Being freed is the only salvation. May I and all beings be freed. Nibbana is the only salvation. May I and all beings attain Nibbana. Nibbana is the only salvation. May I and all beings attain Nibbana. Nibbana is the only salvation. May I and all beings attain Nibbana. May I and all beings in all worlds be freed from the bondage of lust, freed from the bondage of aversion, freed from the bondage of delusion, freed from the bondage of Mara, healed with the eternal bliss of Nibbana. 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 Just as a reminder, if there are any among you who are interested in transcribing these sermons, I think there's a need for that. So that's typing out the sermons into written English. There's a need for that, so if there's anyone who's interested in doing that, then there's an opportunity to get involved in passing on the gift of Dhamma. Because what you're doing is a hugely meritorious deed, because there are a lot of people out there to whom we're still, well, I wouldn't say we're struggling to get the Dhamma, but they don't know that they need the Dhamma. So it's a struggle really on their part, because they don't even know they need it. They don't even know they have a problem. Some people, they're not prepared to listen to a sermon because, well, it's a Buddhist monk doing the sermon. So for some people, it's against their religion to listen to someone who speaks anything that is not to do with their faith. For some, they are, you know, when it's a Buddhist monk in a robe, they will switch off. Not interested. So, but if we can get this doctrine, this philosophy, in other means like print media, where there's very little opportunity for any preconceptions to set into the and cloud the mind, I think there's a huge opportunity there for a lot of people to get this, to receive this gift. So, if there are any among you who have maybe a spare hour, a week at least, if that's what you can do, then that's what you can do. there's an opportunity to get involved in that meritorious deed, the merits of which you can only do while the Buddha's doctrine is still available. Remember, if you come back in your next birth as a human and there is no Buddha Dhamma, then that's an opportunity. You won't be able to do that merit then. This merit can only be done while it's still there. And the gift of Dhamma excels all gifts. So, you can be creative. Some of you might be practicing your English, maybe. So this can be a good opportunity for that. Sometimes maybe parents, they want their children to get a little bit more practice. So this is an opportunity for that. Be creative. And then you can, you know, sometimes you're listening to a sermon, reduce the speed. You know, technology these days helps you do that. You reduce the speed to maybe half the speed and you can type it out as you're listening to it. So, try and be creative and you can find opportunities to do that. So if you want to get involved in that, then please inform. Who is it we should inform? Do we know? Okay. Sorry, your name, madam? Okay. If you can inform the lady at the back, Rukmali, then she will help you with setting yourself up and what instructions you need. Right. So we'll transfer the merits that we have all acquired today. And we will conclude the sermon. First and foremost, let us once again take a moment to reflect on the fact that it is because of the Supremely Enlightened One, the Buddha, that we have the gift of Dhamma today. It is because of his infinite compassion for the liberation, salvation of all sentient beings universally that we have the gift of Dhamma today. He sacrificed himself over many eons, many births, to help us all redeem ourselves from the shackles of samsara. The bhikkhus and bhikkhunis, upasakas and upasikas since then, who practiced this Dhamma, who protected and preserved this Dhamma in the form of the Tripitaka and passed it down to us through our ancestors all the way, down to us so that today we have these books, the Tripitaka, to study, to analyze, to comprehend, as well as passing down the gift of Dhamma through the medium of sermons. Let us take a moment to remind ourselves of the contribution that they have all made to our liberation and our salvation. May they all be able to rejoice in the merits that we have all acquired today. May, if any of them have today been born in the woeful plains, may through the power of these merits they be able to redeem themselves from those woeful plains and be born in the blissful plains. And may through the power of these merits they be able to abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to all members of the Mahasangha, including the Mahanayakas, the Anunayakas, who have dedicated their lives to protecting and preserving the Sambuddha Shasane. It is because of them that today you have monks and nuns in your local temples, in your local nunneries, who are giving you the gift of Dhamma. Let us take a moment to transfer merits to the members of the Mahasangha who are resident in your local temples, in your villages, and local nuns who are resident in your local nunneries. It is they who have always been by your side through thick and thin, come rain or shine, through your tough times in life, guiding you, giving you instruction to help make your children good citizens of tomorrow. It is they who have helped shape your lives in ways that you could never have imagined. So may they all be able to rejoice in the merits that we have all acquired today. May through the power of these merits they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer merits to the devas, brahmas, spirits, demons and the dead that we invited at the start of this sermon. In their 10,000 world systems, wherever they may be, if they have joined us to have witnessed this meritorious deed, may they be able to do so. And also our ancestors who have predeceased us, mothers, fathers, brothers, sisters, uncles, aunts, nephews, nieces, grandparents and so on and so forth, husbands and wives, children and so on and so forth, not just in this birth but also in our previous births, those who have been at our side helping us, supporting us, assisting us in any way, shape or form that they might have been able to do so. May they all be able to rejoice in the merits that we have all acquired today. If any of them have been born in the woeful plains, may through the power of these merits they be able to redeem themselves from those woeful plains and be born in the blissful plain. May through the power of these merits they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to all those men and women who would have made this sermon possible, made this event possible, either by inviting you to be here, or perhaps by offering you transport, or maybe by ushering you to a seat, or maybe by giving you a glass of water, whatever shape or form someone might have helped you to come along to this sermon, to be here today, and to make your listening experience comfortable. whatever contribution they might have made, they may they all be able to rejoice in the merits that we have all acquired today. Also particularly transferring merits to all the members of the all the Swami Nuhanses who are resident at this monastery, including Guru Swami Nuhanse, and those Swami Nuhanses and the Anagarikas who have gone through great lengths to make your stay comfortable here by decorating this stage as an offering to the Dhamma, as well as arranging the chairs, making sure that you are able to be sat here comfortably without the heat and sun distracting your attention. May they all be able to rejoice in the merits that we have all acquired today. May through the power of these merits they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to all those men and women who are in your lives alive, parents, your teachers, as well as your co-workers, those men and women who would have helped you to be here today. Some of them may be looking after your businesses, your enterprises, your ventures, relieving you of duties and responsibilities so that you can be here today, as well as members of your family who may be attending to your duties and responsibilities and have relieved you so that you are able to be here today. May they all rejoice in the merits that we have all acquired today. Let us be grateful for their patience with us. Let us be grateful that they have given us this opportunity to be here today. Had it not been for their graciousness, we would not have had this opportunity. So may they all rejoice in the merits that we have all acquired today. May through the power of these merits they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds. Abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to the members of the armed forces, as well as the police force who fought a 30-year-long bloody war in Sri Lanka. It is thanks to them that today we have a country in which we can live in peace and harmony, despite our differences. It is thanks to them, it is thanks to their sacrifices that today we are able to practice the path without fear of bombs going off everywhere, without the fear of death looming around the corner. It is thanks to them that today we are able to practice the path in peace and harmony. May they all be able to rejoice in the merits that we have all acquired today, as well as those men and women who might have lost their lives in the war, either friend or foe. May they all be able to rejoice in these merits. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to all those men and women who might have lost their lives in natural calamities such as the tsunamis, earthquakes, storms and so on and so forth, not just in Sri Lanka but also in other parts of the world. They might be friends and acquaintances, or they might have been people who have not been known to you, but nevertheless reminding ourselves that every man and woman, every creature that we have ever come across in samsara has one day been a mother to us, one day been a father to us. Let us transfer those merits to all of them equally, and may through the power of those merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plains, may through the power of these merits they redeem themselves from those woeful plains and be born in the blissful plains. May through the power of these merits they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, may through the course of all the merits that we have all acquired today, in preaching this sermon and listening to this sermon and preparing yourself to come along to this sermon, as well as making offerings to the Buddha, the Dhamma and the Sangha, and any offerings you might have made to help someone's thirst, maybe to quench their thirst, or maybe sate their hunger, whatever contribution you might have made in any way, shape or form, empower and energize all those men and women throughout the world just like yourselves who are aspiring to attain Nibbana, be able to do so, and may by doing so, may we be able to witness the advent of many hundreds of thousands of Arhat and Mahanses on this blessed land in our very lives itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, may through the course of all these merits that we have all acquired today, you and I and all of us be able to become one of those Arhat and Mahanses, one of those Arhat Mehin Mahanses in this very human birth itself, in the era of the Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. The members of the Mahasangha will now transfer their blessings to you. Raga ginnen midatva, dvesha ginnen midatva, moha ginnen midatva, nibbana parama sukhayen, sukhita taravetva. Nibbana parama sukhayen sukhita taravetva. Mamada siyalu loka siyalu satvayo. Nibbana parama sukhayen sukhita taravetva. නිබාන පරම සුඛයෙන් සුඛිතතර වෙත්වා නිබාන පරම සුඛයෙන් සුඛිතතර වෙත්වා තුන්රුවන්ගේ සූවිසි අනන්ත මහා ගුණ බෙලෙන් සිරි ලෝක සිරි සත්වයෝම නිබාන පරම සුඛයෙන් සුඛිතතර වෙත්වා. May I and all beings in all worlds be freed from the fires of desire. May I and all beings in all worlds be freed from the fires of aversion. May I and all beings in all worlds be freed from the fires of delusion. May I and all beings in all worlds attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. May the Noble Triple Gem be with you all forever. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.